All right. Thank you. My name's Sue. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon because today I love an alcoholic. God, you guys look good, you know. I love the enthusiasm. You know, I love the enthusiasm that when you walk in rooms like these at big conferences like this, it just, God, you can feel the presence of God and the enthusiasm for living and life, and that's recovery. And that's why I keep coming back. I want that. And you guys definitely have what I want this weekend. It's, I want to thank Wes and the committee for inviting Keith and I to come back. It's really neat. We got to go to Sun Valley last year, and it's neat to be asked to come back someplace. Yeah. When we left Sun Valley, you didn't tell us to go home either. So that's new for us, and it feels good. And I want to thank Debbie and the Al-Anons today. They entertained me real well. They we got to participate in my favorite sport, shopping. We got to have a meeting at lunch, and I got to go to the Al-Anon meeting this morning, and that was a dynamite meeting. And there was definitely Al-Anon recovery going on in that room, and what I got to see was a lot of people that felt good about themselves because of the strength that comes behind the surrenders that we have to go through to get where we are right now today. And that felt good. I felt right at home. You know, it's so neat to go someplace where you really don't know people, but you really know them. You know, only the names and the faces change, and that feels so good. One of the things that I love about being in these things, I love the Al-Anons. I love the Al-Anon program, and I love being with my type of people. But the thing that turns me on, and I got to be honest with you, is the alcoholics. Now, I love alcoholics. You know, you're my entertainment. If you don't like what an alcoholic's doing, wait 5 minutes. And I've learned around here how to not make an alcoholic lie. I don't ask them questions. Newcomer said one time, I can't tell if my husband's lying to me or not. And I said, are his lips moving? Those are some of the things of acceptance that I've gotten by coming to the program of Al-Anon. One of the things of acceptance that I've gotten more than anything, so I can love the alcoholics and the alcoholics in my life, is that I had to accept first how sick I was, because they say alcoholism is a disease. And if the alcoholics are really sick, then it made me look at myself. If I enjoy being around sick people, what's that make me? You know? And I like that kind of acceptance of me today. You know, I'm here because I'm not all there. You know? And so we get... And the crazier you are and the sicker you are, the better I like you. Now, it's just, my life has not been boring since an alcoholic entered my life. And that has nothing to do with drunkenness or sobriety. Now, it doesn't matter. There's never been any boring days in my life since I met Keith. And I like that. I like that because I'm the kind of person that I like action, and he's definitely an active alcoholic. I told my sponsor one time, I said, you know, I might not have to come to these meetings. If Keith had just been a couch drunk, if he'd just come home and passed out in front of the TV and just been a couch drunk, you might have been okay around our house. And she looked at me and she said, Sue, a couch drunk could not have lived with you. So I had to work on a lot of excesses for that and find out what she meant, you know. That's I love this program, and it's given me some answers for myself, because you see, I believe there are no victims today. Once you find the answer, there are no victims. I don't have to play the blame game anymore. Anytime I get into a problem, I get to look at Sue, and my program helps me to do that, because you see, my answers are the solutions in this program today. The disease is my problem, and it makes me look at me, and this program's the solution. I like that today. That's exciting. I get to learn something new about myself on a regular basis. And if I walk away, I believe it will become instantly the way it used to be. Because you see, I'm just full of old ideas, and that disease is just so close and so elusive, that if I don't keep coming back, I will return to where I came from. And so I really believe that this program is just as much a life and death program for an Al-Anon as it is for an alcoholic. Because without you, I would put myself in positions where I would not be here today. You know, I would not have the answers, and I would not have the life I have today. I wouldn't want to give that up for nothing today. Not for anything. Because you see, I enjoyed living today, and when I got here, I thought I was dying. And I lived in hell before I got here, and you guys have given me the answers. I did not come from an alcoholic home, and I sat in meetings when I was young. I wondered, what is a lady like me doing in a place like this? You know, because I thought, he said that once you're attracted to an alcoholic, you will always be attracted to an alcoholic. I know that's true today. But I heard a lot of people sharing that they came from alcoholic homes, and I did not do that. And my folks drank very little, and just probably once or twice a year. You know? And what I had to really do with this program is look at me and see where I came from and the things that I felt inside of me. And today I know that the things that I was inside of me were no different than the alcoholic. You see, I have the same feelings of inadequacy, loneliness, not being part of. You know, all of those things are in me. And I grew up like that. And I lived in the Texas and Oklahoma and Western Kansas area. And my folks worked in the oil fields. And I grew up being called oil field trash and moving from one city to another, living in a trailer house. And I never felt like part of. And I wanted to be part of so bad, and I never knew how. And I did things to please my parents so I would not make them unhappy. You know, so the defect of people pleasing was there. That eventually became to cause me a lot of pain. And I had to look at those things and to find out, you know, that I was the middle child of three, and I felt like I wanted to be up front. And I would get in the car with my parents, and I'd be in the front seat with my mother and father, and I'd leave my sister and brother in the back seat. And I would call my mother and father and I the Three Musketeers, because I had to be somebody and I had to be up front. And I craved that. I wanted to be number one so bad. And I would play the games and nobody's here but me, because I had that feeling of needing to belong, to wanting somebody to love me, to make me feel worthwhile. I was looking for things on the outside to make me feel good on the inside, and I didn't know that I have to fix the inside first. And as I grew up, I didn't have the courage in school to do the things that the other girls were doing that made them look like they were somebody. You see, I judged my insides with your outsides. And they were trying out for cheerleader and doing all these things, and I wanted to be those things, but I never had the courage to do that or to be that. I was always afraid, because, you see, I was always afraid of the disapproval. I was always afraid, and I thought that the disapproval was losing. I thought the disapproval was failure. I didn't know I didn't need all that approval, because at that point in my life, I did. And so I grew up with all those feelings. And when I was young, my father passed away when I was around 15 years old. And I started doing things to get attention from guys, and I ended up in places I didn't want to be. And my mom started dating and partying after about a year, and I became the responsible one in that house. I didn't like the way she acted and the things that she was doing. And today I know that was just the beginning of my disease of Al-Anon. Because, you see, I tried to control her. I wanted her to look at herself. And my mom's not an alcoholic, but I didn't like the things that went with the alcohol. I didn't know I was powerless over what alcohol does to people. I was trying to control it way back then, before I ever met an alcoholic. And I went to a country dance with my mom and her friends one night up in Diamond, Oklahoma. And I stood in that dance, and I watched this cowboy move around the room. And every place he went, something was happening, and I liked that, because I thought it took a lot of courage to do some of the things he was doing, like fighting. Well, and I stood there, and I watched him, and he was in a fight, and he came running past me, and he went into the women's restroom. He goes, "Hey, honey, will you let me know when the cops come out, when they leave?" And like a good potential Al-Anon, I was given direction, and I hung in there, and I stood there beside that door, and when the cops left, I said, "Okay, cowboy, you can come out now," you know, and he came out. And he asked me for the last dance, and usually the last dance is a slow dance where you kind of lean on each other and rub up against each other and get ready to go home. And this is a fast dance, you know, and it kept getting faster and faster and faster, and we never missed a lick. And I liked that. You know, it was in the fast lane. That was almost 27 years ago, and we haven't left that fast lane yet, you know. So after a few weeks, he called me and asked me for a date. And my mom said, you're not going to go with him. He's older than you are. He's been married before, and he's in trouble all the time. And all the things were there for me to look at, and I chose not to look at him because there was something about it that I liked, and I wanted what he had. I did not know that what it was the disease of alcoholism, because, you see, the way it affected me as a non-drinker is that it gave me courage. An alcoholic gave me courage. What I understand today because of this program is that he drank to get courage out of a bottle and to get up front and to do things, and it made him somebody, and I wanted what he had, and I used him to make me feel like somebody, and I hooked onto an alcoholic, and I got up front, and I went downtown, and I was just who I wanted to be, and it made me somebody. I'm a user, and I'm an abuser, and only I use people to do it with. I use an alcoholic the same way an alcoholic uses booze, to fix on. He was my fix, and he was making me feel good, and he was fixing the insides, and the outsides were starting to look good too, you know, because I had to fix it up for him. And it was like all of those things were there. And when he came in and knocked on the door, my mom said, you're not going, and I went anyway. And one of the things that should have told me something was that when we went outside to get in his car wasn't there. So, and I said, now, wait a minute, you know, how are we going to go anywhere around here? And he said, well, you see, I'm on a DWI, and I don't have a driver's license, and I wrecked my car. And he said, but you have a car. And I said, oh, yeah, you know, no problem. And so we got in my car, and I took us to the drive-in movie, the same place I always went on all my dates, you know. And I used to sit in the drive-in movie and kiss and smooch and steep up the windows, you know. And I sat there with Keith at the drive-in movie, and we watched the movie. And I thought, God, that must be what it's like to be with a more mature man. Yeah. And I loved it. I just loved it, yeah. And then he took me home, and it was the first time I'd ever gone on my first date that the guy asked me on the second date in the same night, you know. And God, I liked that. That was wonderful. He must like me, because during that movie, when he wasn't paying any attention to me, I was thinking, what's wrong with me? And we have a pamphlet in Al-Anon that says, you know, you think these things, like, aren't I pretty enough? Aren't I smart enough? You know, aren't I good enough? What's wrong with me? And then when he took me home and he asked me for that second date, it made it okay. I am okay. I was validated. I had to have another human being validate me to make me okay. And we started dating, and we started doing a lot of crazy things. And he said, not show up for dates. And God, that would make me angry. And the reason he didn't show up is because he was drinking, and he'd forget. Or else he'd come and he'd be drunk, and that would make me mad. And I had to get even. I love the sweet taste of revenge. In fact, I used to go around saying that all the time. And so I have to get even. And the next time he'd ask me out for a date, I'd try to drink a couple of beers or whatever to make me drunk when he got there. Because, you see, when he did that to me, it hurt. It hurt in here. And I wanted him to pay back. You know, I wanted him to hurt like I hurt. And so I'd do what he'd done. And he'd come to pick me up, and he'd say, well, you're not going. And I'd go, why not? And he'd say, because you're drunk. And I go, but I go with you when you're drunk. He'd go, I know, but I don't hang out with drunks. You do. And he was right. He was right, yeah. And we'd get in fights, and I'd throw the key out of the car into vacant lots, and he'd come, and I'd run home, and he'd come and knock our door down to get in the house, and my mom would be 2 o'clock in the morning, my mom said, my God, what's wrong with you? And he'd tell her that I'd throw my keys out and lost them, and my mom would send me back to that vacant lot to find his keys, and she'd say, why do you treat this boy like this? Cunning, baffling, and powerful is a disease of alcoholism. You know, and I tried doing all kinds of things to get his attention, to make me feel like number one. I did not recognize that I was competing with alcohol. And that's what I was doing. The first Christmas that we dated, we went to Liberal, Kansas to a honky-tonk dance. And Dad, I used to love going to those honky-tonk dances. There was just something about them that was wonderful. The terrible smell and the dim lights and all those things just made it perfect. Yeah, and I looked good in there too. Yeah, he looked good in there too. Yeah, and everything was right. But when he wasn't paying enough attention to me, I'd start flirting with other guys because, you see, I had to get his attention. And I'd go to any length to get his attention. And I didn't care how I did it or what it was, as long as it was the attention. And it usually ended up in anger. And we'd get in a fight, and we'd go out, and we got in the car, and he said, you know, we're going home, and I'm driving, and he was too drunk to drive, and it was either walk home from Liberal, Kansas, or go with him. And I got in the car, and we started home. We got across the Oklahoma state line, and we went through radar, and he said, oh, my God, if they catch me, I'll get thrown back in jail, and I'll be so far back, I'll never see the sun. So I said, no problem. And we switched places in that car going 100 miles an hour so he wouldn't have to go to jail. But there's nothing wrong with me, you know. And so when we got to the other end of the state line, there was a roadblock, and they stopped us. And they came up to me, and they said, we don't know how you got under this wheel or who was even driving. It wasn't you back there. And we don't know how you got here, but we're taking you both in. And so they arrested Keith and put handcuffs on him, put him in the sheriff's car, and told me to follow on 40 miles to the county seat of Beaver, Oklahoma, so I could get arrested. One more time, a potential Al-Anon was given direction, and I hung in there. We got in that courthouse, and we're standing there in that jail, and they're taking our fingerprints, and they said, you can make one phone call. And he said, I want to speak to the district attorney. And I said, my God, this man goes straight to the cops. And I was so impressed. I'm being fingerprinted, but I'm impressed, you know. And pretty soon this man with mature gray hair and a winter coat came walking in, and I was immediately attracted to him. And today I know it's because he's an alcoholic. And he walked up to us, and Keith said, so I want you to meet my father. So the first Christmas we dated, I was in custody of my future father-in-law, and I was already taking the rap for the alcoholic, you know. But there's nothing wrong with me. You know, it's my disease that I have to do anything to be somebody. And I have to do anything to get that approval. Yeah. And we dated of 2 years of living in insanity and fighting like that. And Keith got a draft notice, and we decided we couldn't live without each other. So we ran off the next weekend to get married. And the next weekend after that, Keith went to take his physical, and Uncle Sam didn't mind, so I got to keep him. And shortly after that, his grandparents and I decided that what he really needed was to finish school. And so we decided to move to Stillwater, Oklahoma, because, you see, Keith had been in school for quite a few years already, and I knew that I had what it took to help him hang in there and to get a degree. And so we went to that town. He went to school for 4 years, and during that time was a period of my life where I felt all the power. I had all that sick power that every pre-Al-Anon just dreams of having, because I was working, Keith was going to school, and I had control of the checkbook. And the kind of alcoholic I live with, if you want control, take control of the purse strings, because it worked for me. And there was many times that Keith would come in and he'd say, Sue, I can't handle this. You're working, my folks are paying for my school, and I can't handle the pressure and the humility. I just got to have 2 beers with the guys tonight. And I said, but you always get in trouble. And he said, I won't tonight, I promise. I promise I won't do that tonight. And I'd say, okay. Because, you see, I wanted to believe all those promises. Today, what I know is that he meant those promises, but he couldn't keep them. And he'd be gone for a couple hours, and the doorbell would ring, and I'd go to the door, and there'd be a cop with Keith, and they'd say, you know, if you keep him here, we won't arrest him this time. It was like people were always bringing him back to me. And I soon got the message that he was my responsibility. And by that time, we'd had a little girl. And I can remember the feelings of being grateful it was a little girl, because, you see, Keith was a drunk, his dad was a drunk, and his granddad was a town drunk, and I did not know that the disease of alcoholism has no prejudice. That it doesn't matter who you are, what sex you are, what color you are, it'll take you to the depths of insanity. And I thought that it was just men that were in those cars. I didn't know that some of you ladies were in there with them. Yeah? And I'm glad I didn't. And the part of my recovery in that area is I don't think there's anything more beautiful than to see a beat-down alcoholic woman walk in the program of AA and become a flower. You know, the blossom of the alcoholic woman is wonderful. I love that. Yeah, and so we had all those fights in Oklahoma. The only thing that changed is that we've gotten married and had a little girl when we moved. And we got to have all those fights. There was nights that Keith would leave, there was nights that I'd leave, you know. And it took him 4 years to get a 2-year degree, but we hung in there for it, and I took all the credit. And the self-righteousness that came behind that, you know, and the pitiful need. He needed me. He wouldn't have done it without me. I needed all of that. And he came home one day and he said, I've taken a job in California. We're going to move to California. And I said, no, we're not. I'm not going to raise our children out there. It's too wild and crazy in California, you know. And he gave me the best sales pitch I've ever had because, you see, we were going to those honky-tonks and we were going to those taverns and we were going to those domino parlors. We were drinking out of paper sacks and it was beneath me. Because, you see, I only came from the place of being oil field trash and I was up from there, I thought. You know, always wanted to be somebody. I had to be somebody. And I didn't like where I was at, and I didn't like the things that I was doing, because ladies didn't drink like that. They didn't drink out of paper sacks. They didn't pour half of a Coke bottle out and fill it up with booze and shake it and let it fizz in their mouth. Ladies didn't act like that. And when he came home and said in California, they serve cocktails and restaurants, boy, I loved it. And 2 days later, the moving van was in our driveway, and we were moving to California. And it was wonderful, the trip out there. By that time, we'd gotten a German Shepherd, and we had a cat, and we had Simone, and it was Keith and I, and we had a station wagon, and we went to from Stillwater to Oklahoma City first, and before we could go to California, because, you see, there was a guy there that his girlfriend worked for a pharmacy, and we had to get a prescription filled in a baggie before we could go to California. And it was like, it depended on what pill he took that day as to how far we went. And there were days that we just stayed put. Yeah, and it only took us 30 days to get to California, which, and it was crazy, you know. The dog got so crazy that he'd stand behind the driver's seat and he'd chase trucks to the back of the car, you know, barking. And Simone was crying and I was bitching and it was just wonderful. We finally got to California, and the minute we got in the San Bernardino County line, we got arrested. And it was like it was supposed to be different, you know, because Keith hadn't bought a rearview mirror for the right side of the car, because that's where I sat, and all I had to do was look out. He got a mirror for the left side of the car. And they stopped us and said they didn't have rearview mirrors, human rearview mirrors in California. Now, they didn't like people hanging out the window in California. It was too dangerous, you know. In Oklahoma, it didn't matter. Well, but it was going to be different for me in California. And then the night came that Keith came home and said, you want to go to dinner? And I go, oh, wow, yeah, I want to go to dinner. You know, and we got to go to one of those restaurants. And I loved it. We drove up this building, and it was beautiful, and it was a brick building, and it had a neon sign on the front of it that said cocktails. And it's like, wow, you know. These people were dressed up, and they were going inside. And we went in there, and they looked nice, and they were acting nice, you know, and it was neat, you know, and Simone was with us, and we were dressed up, and we were somebody. You see, I was fixing on all this whole thing, and I was fixing on the scene, and it was making me feel like a lady, and I felt like somebody, and I had arrived, and that was exactly where I wanted to be. Because, you see, I thought it was the patterns of our living that would change our life. And it is, but it wasn't out there. And we got to go in that restaurant, and they came over and, do you want a cocktail? And I go, yeah, because nobody can really get on drunk on cocktails if somebody else is mixing them. I didn't know that I would start counting those cocktails, and I immediately started doing that. And we didn't leave Simone out at all. She was ordered Shirley Temples, and she sat there, and we'd have our toast, and we'd have our drinks with her. And it's a family disease, and I believe the disease is carried through environment and by example. And we did that in our home. And then they came and asked us if we wanted to order, and they said, would you like wine with your dinner? And I thought, oh my gosh, this is the ultimate. Because you see, I'd never had fine china being raised in a trailer house. You never had those things. You never had the nicer things in life. And there was people in there drinking wine, and they had these long stem crystal glasses. And they were squishing them around and sniffing them. I didn't know why they were doing that for, but it looked classy to me, and I wanted to be like them. And I loved it. And I felt so good, and they brought us our wine. And they poured Keith just a little bit and asking if it was okay. He used to drink stuff that had things floating in it. You know? And after he gave them his approval, they poured mine, and I loved it. And I swished my glass, and I didn't know why I was doing this, you see. I was just doing it because he did it, and I wanted to be like he is. And I'm swishing it, and I'm sniffing it, and God, I loved it, and I'm fixing on the whole scene, and I tip it up to sip it, and I looked across the table at Keith, and he's drinking out of the carafe. And God, I hated that, you know. And I go, God, don't do that. Don't act like that. And he's going, shut up, you know. And I say, look, everybody's looking at us now, you know. And he'd look at people and say, what are you looking at, you know. And it's like, then I go, oh, my gosh, you know. And then the waiter would walk by and they go, are you going to bring us our food? And they go, no, because you aren't going to eat here. And we'd get 86 out of the restaurant, you know. And it's like, what happened? What happened? And we'd go home and we'd get in the house and I'd get right in his face. And don't you ever do that to us again. Don't you ever embarrass us like that again. He'd say, Sue, get out of my face. And I'd take one step closer. And I'd start in on him again. He'd say, if you don't get out of my face, I'm going to hit you. And I'd take one step closer and he'd hit me. And then the fight would be on. You know, and we'd stand there and we'd have a rip-roaring fist fight, you know. And then we'd get through and it's like, I didn't feel good because I always got the dirty end of the stick and my anger was still there, and I'd turn to Simone and I'd take the rest of my anger out on Simone. You see, alcoholism is a family disease and you don't have to drink alcohol to be affected by it. And I used to take all of that anger and all those things out on Simone because, you see, I couldn't do it with Keith because I can't control an alcoholic. And I didn't know those were the things that I was trying to do. I didn't know that those were the characteristics of the disease of Al-Anonism. I didn't know that's why I was acting that way. And we got to have those fights, and they got worse, and they got worse. And there were times that I called the cops, I'd holler, Simone, go get the cops, you know, and the cops would come to our house. And then we found out later that there was a cop that lived down the street, and I'd call Arlene, and she'd say, Don's already on his way down there. You know, we had our own personal cop. And there was times I'd pick up the phone and just call the police station and they'd say, Sue, look outside, they're already out there, you know. And I loved it when they'd take him off like that because it was the only time I'd get to sleep. Because I was so afraid, because you see, by that time, Keith was into a lot of guns all the time. We used to fight over guns and I hated that and I'd get so fearful. And it was like, the only way I knew how to defend myself is that I started carrying a butcher knife. And we used to have the fights with the butcher knife and the gun, you know. And he'd put his gun right on the end of my nose and he'd say, shut up or I'm going to shoot you. And I'd stick my knife right in his stomach and I'd say, go ahead. And he'd say, you're crazy. If I shoot you, you'll die. And I said, if you shoot me, the momentum will force me backwards and the knife will go forwards and we'll both die at the same time. And he'd say, you're crazy. Now, but I used to live for those moments because it was like one time he had me on the bed and his hands around my throat and he was choking me and I couldn't breathe. And it dawned on me that he wasn't thinking about anything but me. He was wanting to kill me, but I was number one. And I loved it. I loved it. And I started provoking those kind of situations a lot. And then I'd turn on Simone again, you know. And we was having a fight over the guns one night and the police came, you know. And it's like, and I know many Al-Anons in here can identify with how a drunk will sober up the minute the police walk up. You know, it's like night and day. And they walk up there and where's the gun? During the fight, I'd taken the holster and I was hitting Keith with the holster. And so when the cops walked up, they go, where's the gun? I go, I don't know. Ask him. And they go, you got the holster. And I said, but that's my weapon. And they go, we know. Where's the gun? Now, and they got mad because they thought that I wasn't giving them the truth and that I was just telling them stuff. And so they put the handcuffs on me and said, we're going to have to take you in. And I go, what are you doing? I'm not the one that has the problem. It's him. And they said, no, but you're the one that has the holster. And then I smarted off at him, and then they smarted off at me, and Keith said, you're not going to treat her like that. And he hit one of the cops, and they took the handcuffs off of me and put them on him. And I felt good. Now you got the right person. And I loved it. And then he went off with them one more time. He'd taken pills one time, and I called the cops, and they came, and I said, you know, putting him in jail doesn't help. You got to do more for him. He's crazy. There's something wrong with him. And so they took him down to the Orange County Nut Ward. And it's like he called me and said, you've really done it this time. you are dead. I got so afraid, and I called the cops, and I cussed him out because they'd told me he couldn't get me anymore, and here he is calling me and telling me he's going to kill me, and I told him all of that. And they said, well, we can't guarantee anything, and they hung up. And pretty soon, here comes the cop to the house and said, you got a pack. And I said, what for? And they said, we can't guarantee how long they'll keep him, so you'd be safer going someplace else. And it's like, he's in the night ward, and I'm not even safe in my own house. And we're scared, and we're like, what do we do? And he said, you pack, and I'll wait here until you get packed, and then you gotta leave. And it's like, where am I safe now? Where can I go now? And I didn't know where to go, and I was scared he'd get out, and he'd start looking at me. So Simone and I went and got a motel room across the street from the nut woods so I could sit up all night and watch the front door. But it's like nothing's wrong with me. You know, if he will only quit drinking, I will be okay, you know. And then we get to go back home the next morning, and I didn't like Keith sneaking up on me, so I'd stack pans in front of the front door, because when I hit that door, hit those pans, I was up, you know, because I didn't want him to sneak up on me. And I slept with that butcher knife under my pillow, and he slept with a gun on his nightstand. We loved each other so much. And it's like we had to have those things there to protect us from each other, you know. And it's like our life progressed, and it got to the point we had a fight, and I fell on the floor, and the whole side of my face got kicked in, and it's like I couldn't tell any more lies. And I went to work, and I told all those lies about things that had happened to me and how I'd gotten that, and we'd ridden motorcycles, and I'd fallen off. And at noon, I went across the hall to the lawyer's office, and I said, I want a divorce. And he said, what happened to you? And I said, my husband and I had a fight. And he said, Dad, you fight like this all the time? And I said, no, just when he drinks. He said, do you think he's an alcoholic? And I said, I don't know what that is. He's just a drunk. And he said, don't you want him to stop drinking? I said, of course I do. I've tried everything. He said, have you ever taken him to Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, no, what is that? He said, it's a place where people go that they stop drinking. And I said, good, I've never tried that. You know, where are they? And they said, make him call and take him to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you really love him, take him there so he can stop drinking. So I went home and I told Keith, I said, I was going to divorce you today, but I went to a lawyer. And he told me, if I really loved you, to make you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you see, I thought I had all power. It was like, if you love me, you'll quit drinking. And I thought I had all power. I didn't know that in the meantime, Keith had been to a judge and he'd given him a court card. You know, coming back when I'm powerful. And he looked at me and he said, Sue, I knew it was going to come to this. And he said, I called AA this afternoon. He said, a guy came over and showed me where there was a meeting down the street. And he said, there's one there tonight. And I said, what time does it start? And he said, 8:30. And I said, what time's it over? And he said, 10. And I said, good, you'll go. And he said, well, I don't know. So I fixed dinner and we ate, and then he laid down on the couch while I did the dishes. And at 8 o'clock, I took my butcher knife and I went over to the couch and I said, get up. And he said, what for? And I said, we're going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, I don't think I want to. And I said, I think you do. And I jabbed him in the wrist. And he got up. And we got in the car. And we went over there. And I said, where is it? And he said, it's right over there in that door. And I said, okay, fat boy, you come out of that door for 10 o'clock, I'm going to gut you. Sat in that parking lot every Monday night for 4 months. And I kept him sober for 4 months. The sad part about that is there was an Al-Anon meeting going on in another room in that church at the same time. But you see, there was nothing wrong with me yet. He was the sick one. He was the one that needed help. There wasn't anything wrong with me. And that's a good reference point for me. Because you see, I know today I can't keep an alcoholic sober. And I didn't. And I thought he had a down paddle, let him go by himself, and he came home drunk. And the next 3.5 years was living hell in our house. Because the anger built, and there was no love in there anymore. And the love turned to hate. And the hate turned to nothing. And it's like nothing matters. It's like, and Keith has told me many times, it didn't matter if he took one drink, if he drank a fifth, or if he drank 2 beers. My personality changed. And today I know it did. Because you see, I didn't care. I didn't want him drinking at all. because I knew that it would end up bad, because everything always started out good and it ended up bad, you know. And I never understood what had happened. It's like it would get to a point and it was gone. And there was many times we had those fights, and Simone suffered through those fights just like we did. And it got to the point that I couldn't live like that anymore. And I believe that every Al-Anon has to hit a bottom just like an alcoholic does, because I had to get to a point that I couldn't go any further. And I was tired, and it was like I couldn't even get in the car to go to the grocery store anymore. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't function. And I was just tired, and I was so fearful and so afraid of the things that were happening in our house. And we had that last fight in our house, and it's so important for me to remember that last fight, because, you see, I can't forget where I came from. Because, you see, if I forget where I come from, number one, the gratitude's gone, and number two, I might return. And, you see, today my fears of walking backwards is so much greater than my fears of what I have to walk through forward, because you're there for me to walk through all of the things that I'm going to have to go through. But I don't know what's back there other than hell. The hell's back there, and I don't want that anymore. And at that last fight in the house, something happened. And today I know it was my higher power walking in my life, because, you see, a long time ago, I rejected my God, because I got to the point that I'd asked God on a daily basis, please don't let this man drink today. And he'd end up drunk every day, and I'd think, what's wrong with me that God doesn't answer my prayers? And so I'd reject my God, and I'd say, to hell with you, who needs you? And I got to the point that when I totally gave up and I couldn't do it anymore, something happened in our home, and there was no more yelling going on. Nobody was running around, guarding the doors, shutting the windows. And Simone wasn't running for her two sacks that she kept all of her emergency stuff in for when we had to leave. And I saw Keith over in the corner, and he had Simone in the corner, and he was doing the things to her he'd always done to her, but I never really fought before until then. And I really fought. And I thought, all of my excuses are gone. He's not even a good father anymore. I have no reasons left to stay. And I looked at him and I said, Keith, I don't love you anymore. But I don't hate you either. And if you got to become a skid row bum, that's what you got to do. But Simone and I ain't going to go any further with you anymore. We're leaving. And it's like we went and got our things and we walked out of that house for the very last time. Today I understand what happened in that home that day. You see, that's the day I took off my God suit. And I got out of the way for 4 days, and I let booze and God do for an alcoholic what no other human being can do. And I wasn't in the way, and it was like, I don't even remember a whole lot of what happened during those 4 days, because, you see, I was non-functional. I was operating in that mental blackout that we get to when the insanity sets in, and we have no answers. And there was no answers for me, and I didn't want reality. And I didn't like living where I was at, and I didn't know where to go or what to do. But I knew it wasn't working for me anymore. And after 4 days, Mom and I went back to the house to get some things. And by then, we'd built a swimming pool, because that's what Keith needed to relax a couple of years before. And we went home, and we were sneaking up on the house because we were always so afraid, because we'd leave our animals there. And there was a time that Mom had brought home a little dog, and we'd left, and she had hugged on this dog, and Keith came in. And he said, you love that dog more than you do me. And he shot that dog. And we didn't cry that day. We didn't love and we didn't hate. There was just that fear in that house of don't do it wrong. You know, but then you couldn't do it right either. And it was the disease of alcoholism living in our house. And so we had those fears of walking up there to see if one of our animals was dead or if Keith was dead. We never knew what was going to be there when we got back. And so we snuck up and we looked in the window in the kitchen, and Aunt Simone goes, there he is. Went, oh my God, and we ran out and got in the car, and it's clear down in the box. So I said, where? Yeah, and she said he was sitting in the jacuzzi relaxing with all of his guns on. Yeah, and so we waited till it got dark, and then that night we went back and we walked in that house, and it was dark in that house, and we were afraid. And we looked around that house and we couldn't find him, and we went in the bedroom, and he was laying face down in the bedroom. I thought, oh my God, he's dead. And we reached over and we kicked him. And he turned over and he said, Sue, please help. And I looked at that man, and for that moment, the time came back to me that I'd taken him to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, I'd done everything for that man I could do. That was how important that was to me, that experience. It was a reference point to me. And I knew that I couldn't do anything for an alcoholic. And for the first time in my life, I said no. small, I can't help you. If you want help, do it yourself. And I'm grateful today for God and Alcoholics Anonymous because a man came to our house, and I remember the doorbell rang, and I opened the door, and I was so disappointed. There was a little shriveled up, gray-headed man standing there, and I thought, my God, why don't they send the big ones on these trips? And I got to watch the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous happen in our house. And he asked me to go with him to take Keith to a detox unit, and I went with him. And then when we came back home, he said, he parked in the driveway, and he said, Sue, you've been affected by the disease of alcoholism. It's a family disease, and we need help. And I said, you know, there isn't anything wrong with me, and I'm not going to stick around here because, you see, I've heard all those promises. And he said, don't you know that that man is sick with the disease of alcoholism, and that every time he made those promises, he meant them? But the disease of alcoholism didn't, and the disease had the man, and he couldn't control it. And he said, he's not a bad person. He's a sick person. And he said, you're sick too, because I've seen this negativism about you. And he said, you need help. And there's a program called Al-Anon for you. And he said, if you're going to stay around here and you want that man to stay sober, the only way you'll ever be able to help him is to get a program for yourself. Because, you see, he said, I've seen it many times. And today I can say I've seen it many times. But when a sober alcoholic comes home to an old idea, he'll have to return to drinking, or he'll have to leave to maintain sobriety. Because, you see, there's no common interest. There's no common way of life being shared in that house. And he said, to make it, we'd all have to work a program, and I'd have to go to Al-Anon. And then we went in the house, and he told Simone, if you really love your daddy, you go to the program of Alateen because you need help. You've been affected by this disease. You have the feelings of guilt, that you think that you can help your mom and dad, and it's not your problem, and that you'll have to go to Alateen to find those things out. And so Simone and I started going to the program of Al-Anon and Alateen, but we weren't as sick as Keith, and we went once a week. And Keith came home, and he started going to a meeting every night. And I could see a difference in him. And I thought, I wonder what's happening. But I wasn't that sick, so I only needed one meeting a week. And it was like after 6 weeks, Keith didn't come home from meeting when I thought he should. And it was late, and I started thinking all those things, you know. And there'd been a time that I hadn't killed him because I got so devastated that we didn't have six friends to carry his casket. And I knew he knew six sober alcoholics that could carry his casket. And I felt so good, Al. And I thought, this is crazy. You can't feel this way. And I started trying to think of the things that I'd heard in those six meetings that I'd been to. I thought, I've got to remember some of these things. You know, what are they saying there? And I couldn't remember nothing. And Keith came home, and my mouth was attached to the doorknob, just like it had always been. And I got right in his face, and he goes, Sue, get out of my face. And I took one step closer. And he looked at me, and he said the most devastating thing I'd ever heard from him. He said, Sue, get out of my face. I'm not going to hit you anymore. I can't stay sober like that. My sobriety comes first. You're going to have to fix yourself. Oh, my God, that went crazy. My fix wasn't working for me anymore. What was I going to do? What's going to make me feel like somebody? And I turned around, and I was crying, I was yelling, I ran to the bathroom, I slammed the door, and as I turned around, I saw a reflection of a crazy lady in that mirror. And today I know it was my God talking to me, and the words came to my head, one meeting a week is not going to fix you. And today I know that my progress in this program is in direct proportion to how many meetings I go to. And I go to 4 and 5 Al-Anon meetings a week because, you see, I want what you got. And I've recognized some of my character defects, and one of them's impatience. And the more I go, the more I get. And one of them's greed, and I want everything you got. And I'm selfish, and I'm a thief, and I steal things from you in meetings. Because, you see, I can't live any other way. You see, I want the things that are positive in my life today. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism works through people, and it's the negative part of my life. And the flip side of that coin is the program of Al-Anon for me. And God works through people, and you're the positive side of my life. And I have to have that constant positive input to outbalance the negative of that disease of alcoholism that lives within me. And I've got to have that way of life. And I got to go to those meetings, and I didn't like those people hugging on me. And I go, what do they want? And this lady said, they don't want anything, Sue. They just love you unconditionally. And I said, why? And they said, because they understand. We've all been there. We all know what you're going through. And she said, you've been coming for a while. Don't you think it's time that you laid that knife down? You better put it up. She said, can you imagine what it would feel like if you set that knife in peace? And I went, yeah. I wanted those feelings. And I asked that lady to be my sponsor, and I said, you know, I started feeling good in those meetings, and I started hearing some things, and I felt good for that hour and a half that I was in that meeting. And I asked her one night, how do I feel this way at home? And she said, you take this program home. That's where you got sick. That's where you take the recovery. And if you ain't taking it home, you ain't going to recover. It doesn't matter if you take and work it in a grocery store. It's not that important yet. You got to take them home. And I said, how do I do that? And she said, you got to start hugging and loving on those people at home. And I said, I don't want to do that. And she goes, we don't care. And I said, you mean I really got to hug them? And she said, yes. In fact, tonight when we go home, I want you to put your arms around Keith and I want you to give him a hug. And I said, oh, no, I can't do that. And she said, yes. And I want you to call me in the morning and tell me you did it. And I said, okay, because you see, I knew that my ideas got me here. But everything I knew got me to where I was at. Today I know that true surrender is the willingness to do it someone else's way. And so I got home, and I was going down the hall, and here Keith came, and I go, oh, no, you know. And he got up beside me, and I put my arm around him and patted him, and I turned around, and he goes, wait a minute, what's that for? And I said, I don't know, they told me to do it, don't ask me why. And I started to get doing those things. And one of the things that I started getting to do was get involved in service. And it's only the actions that I take that get me into the recovery of this program. Because service is what points out, my character defects to me. Is interaction with another relationship with a person points out who I am and how I react, not just to an alcoholic, but to everybody. And I started seeing patterns with myself only because I was involved in service. And my sponsor believed in that, and I'm really grateful for that because it saved my life a lot. And we got to start working recovery in our home, and I started feeling better, and she started me through the steps. And I love the steps in this program. Today I believe that there's only one word changed in the 12 steps in the Al-Anon program, and in the 12 step it says others instead of alcoholics. And other than that, it's the same. The Al-Anon program is the same. We got our basis, thank God, from Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for sharing your program with us. And I believe in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because that's where my foundation came from. And anybody that asks me to be their sponsor, I ask them to read that big book because that's where it's at for me. I believe in the Al-Anon program and I live the Al-Anon program, but a lot of my answers come from the foundation, and I'm not so smug and arrogant about it that I think it only comes from one place, and that's from Al-Anon. I want the whole deal. I want the whole package. I'm greedy and I'm selfish and I want it all. And I got to get it from wherever I can get it. And if I don't have the knowledge, then I don't have to do any of the things that make me a better person. And I started working in those steps, and it was like the first step, I said, I'm powerless over Keith and Simone. And my life, when I try to control them, my life becomes unmanageable. And I didn't think that the second step applied to me and that I didn't know how to work it in my life. Until I started remembering some things with some of the things that I did. And then one night I was sitting in an Al-Anon meeting in a Lana Club, and I had my back to the door, and a drunk came in and started yelling about, where's the AA meeting? And he was belligerent, and the Al-Anon told him where the AA meeting was. And after the meeting, I went up to my sponsor, and I said, I don't understand what's happening to me. You see, I got so fearful when that drunk walked in here, and he started yelling, and I've never been afraid of a drunk in my life. He said, maybe you've taken the second step. Because you see, today I do respect that kind of insanity. I do respect that kind of insanity. And I don't have to put myself in a dangerous position anymore to prove my point. And it is a form of surrender. And I didn't know how to turn my will and my life over to God. I didn't even understand. And I said, how can I tell the difference between my will and God's will? And she said, because yours hurts. And she made it so simple for me. And she told me I had to take an inventory, and I tried the blueprint for progress in Al-Anon, and I said, yes, no, and maybe, in some time. And one more time, I had to return to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did the four-column inventory. The first column was the resentment, my first one was peace. The second column is the cause, and it was the violence. And the third column is how it made me feel, and it made me feel like a nobody and less than, like I was just a piece of junk. And then I got to look at my second resentment, he was God. And how it, what happened there, the cause. I said that he had rejected me because he never answered my prayers. Today I know that God did answer my prayers, only he waited till I got to the want to. He waited until I could hear, until I could see, and the answers were there. And how did it make me feel? It made me feel less than and like nobody. And I got to see, like, in all of my resentments, I could have gone ditto in that third column. And then I got to go back to the fourth column, and I believe that's the I got you column. And it's like, how did I, what part did I play in all of those resentments? And I got to look at me, and I got to actually, because I'd asked my God, please help me, put the words in this pencil that I need to see, because I can't lie in black and white. You see, what goes on between my head and my mouth is garbage, but what goes on between the pencil and the paper is the magic of this program for me. And I got to see those things on paper, and I got to relive those resentments as I walked through them with my God in that fourth step, and I got to see how I'd get in peace space. And I tried to force those solutions, and I'd cause most of the violence in our home. And then I said it to my sponsor, and I was devastated. What a horrible person I've been. Because it's the first time in my life that I looked at myself as a mom. Because, you see, I always thought I'd saved her from all those situations when I caused the fights and then we'd run. I was saving her when we ran. And I got to realize that I would turn on her and that I caused most of those fights and she ended up getting the worst part of it. And I got to accept those responsibilities of my actions. And I didn't mind me. And she said, don't be so hard on yourself. You see, you're a sick person and you want to get well and you're doing the things that are going to get you well. You're taking the action that's going to make you a healthy person. And therefore you get to look at the sixth step. You've recognized your character defects. And she said, I believe that's the sixth step, is accepting that part about you and asking your God to let you see that part of you. And the seventh step is turning them over, giving God the bad side and taking the positive side of those character defects and making them an asset in my life. And I've already talked about the selfishness. This is my program, and it comes first in my life. Without it, I have nothing else. The selfishness and the greed and the impatience have taken it all and going more and more and being able to turn those character defects into assets in my life. And then to become willing to write those names down, to see what people I really owe amends to. My sponsor says, if your list is that long, go out in the parking lot and say, sorry, because you got too big of an ego. You didn't really cause that much pain to that many people. These amends are for you. And then when in God's time, I got to make those amends to the people that I really needed to make a verbal amends to. And most of the time, my amends to some of the people in my past was to just stay the hell out of their lives and not to go back and cause any problems for them. And the best way to make amends to my family was to live a good program of Al-Anon life. To try to be the very best Al-Anon that I know how to be on a daily basis. Then the freedom started coming. Once I get through those resentments, and I still have to do that on a daily basis, if I get a resentment, I got to take it through all 12 of those steps. Once I get to make those amends to the people that I resent because of my part that I played in those resentments, then I get to do the 10th step and look at myself on a daily basis to see if I'm repeating those patterns that are going to constantly cause me pain and immediately make amends to them if I am wrong. And then the final decision comes to pray for those people. Prayer and meditation for me and for the people that I love and mostly for the people that I don't love. And to listen and just try to be quiet. And to listen to the answers that my God has for me. And then the total freedom's there. Because you see, after I get to that point, I have that spiritual awakening. And to me, that spiritual awakening is feeling good and hear about food. And I no longer have those resentments toward them. And once I have that spiritual awakening, then I have something to give away. And the 12th step is a three-part step for me, because I have the spiritual awakening, and the middle part is I have a purpose. My God has given me a purpose. And you see, I can't keep something unless I give it away. And that's why it's so important to me to keep coming back, because I want to keep this thing. And I'm willing to do the things that I'm asked in order to keep what I've got. That's why newcomers are so important to me today. I love newcomers. The only thing sicker than the newcomer's higher power. And I love it. And then it's time for me to practice these principles in all of my affairs and take it to the grocery store or wherever I'm at, because then I understand what's happening with me, who I am, and what place I put myself in. It hasn't been easy for us. Come May, we've been in this program 11 years. And I am so grateful today for the physical sobriety in our home. I had to work a really strong program to get to the recovery with Simone, and I had to allow her the time period that she got to hate me for the resentments that she had toward me, and I'm so grateful that I allowed her those feelings, because today we have a super relationship. She's a beautiful lady today, and I love her very much. And today we have togetherness in our apartments, because you see, her program's given her some dignity. She's in the program of Al-Anon today. And she works a strong program, in my opinion, and she loves herself. And she came from a beat-down place with hair in her face and her chin on her chest, to feeling like a nobody and being paranoid of people, to being a lady that stands tall and has dignity about herself, and to follow her dreams, and to have the self-worth to try, and to know that if you don't have a chance, if you don't take a chance, you don't have a chance. And she's taken those chances, and today she lives in Milan, Italy, and she's a professional model, because she chooses to live. And she goes to Al-Anon meetings over there, and what I've gotten to accept is that there is no place where God is not. And he lives in Italy, and I'm grateful for that. She's involved in the program over there, and she started an English-speaking Al-Anon meeting, and she says it's gone because now they have four. And she's fought with the Italians in the Al-Anon meetings, you know, and her experiences in that area is wonderful, you know. And she's grown over there, and you see, knowing that she's there and she has her God there with her, and knowing that there's people like you there for her, release with love is so much easier for me. You make it so easy. Because, you see, my fears go away when I know you're there. And my relationship with Steve is that I love him very much, and our relationship has become stronger. Only because of the surrenders that we've had to go through as we come along. And it has nothing to do with our surrenders and our relationship with each other. Because you see, my love and my relationship with Keith has nothing to do with Keith. It has everything to do with my relationship with my God. Because if I'm in good God consciousness, I feel okay about him. I feel okay about you. But what's most important is I feel okay about me. And we've got to walk through some surrenders in the last couple of years, and they've been painful. And I got to the point I wanted to run away. And my sponsor said, no, you're going to stay. Because you've always been an emotional runner, and you're not going to run away from this one. And you're going to stay, and you're going to be supportive. And I didn't know how to be supportive to an alcoholic without getting into his business. And one more time, the service of this program kept me involved, and I got obsessed with the program of Al-Anon and the people that had asked me to be their sponsor, and they carried me through those times. Because you see, my God gives me the words to share with a newcomer that I need to hear. God works through people. I am only an instrument. And I get to hear some of those things over and over that I need to hear because a newcomer's there for me. And I got to learn to love that man in a whole new way. He got to tell me of the things that he was doing in his life that he'd gotten caught at and wouldn't meet. And I didn't like the feds being in my life again. And I didn't like those kind of surrenders being there. But I knew that it was his problems and not mine. And I'm not going to share his story, but I've got to share with you how I got through that for me. And I got to reach out to my God, and I got to go to bed with that man every night and say thank you for another sober day. Because, you see, I couldn't imagine how an alcoholic could go through what he was going through without drinking. And there was days that I knew that just all he did was not drink, and that was enough.
And therefore, I have no compassion for newcomers when they come to the program and say, well, he's sober, but he's not mowing the lawn. Because I know that there's days that all an alcoholic can do is not drink. And mowing the lawn doesn't mean nothing. It's just not that important. My program teaches me to keep it simple, and I'd heard Keith listening to a tape of a man named Norm A. And that man was dead, and he had been in this program, and he was 12-stepping my husband from the grave. And I thought, if Keith's getting something from that man, his wife is bound to be able to help me because they've been through the surrenders that we're going through. And I called that lady and I said, you've got to share some things with me because I've got to get through this. And I can't become obsessed with that alcoholic and trying to fix him and help him because, you see, I know it's none of my business today. It's his problem and AA and his sponsor's problem. And she said, I know what you're talking about and you're powerless and I know you're feeling that feeling of powerlessness. And she said, you're with that man not because he's an alcoholic. You're with that man because he's your husband and because you love him and because you have accepted that he's an alcoholic. Therefore, you have to accept the things that come with being an alcoholic. And she said, the only way I know how to share with you to help that man is don't let him die in the bedroom. You take the responsibility of a wife. Because that's where his self-worth is going to go down. If he loses there, he's lost it everywhere. And we support him in that area. And I had to do that. And it was risky sometimes because, you see, I fear rejection from an alcoholic. And there were times that I was rejected, but I knew it wasn't personal, that he wasn't in a bad place, and it was okay. And I learned compassion and a whole new way of loving that man. And we got during that time where we could get on our knees and pray together. And that was real special for us. And it was like, the seemingly bad things are sometimes the things that bring us up. And it's just, today I understand that the reason those surrenders were in our life is just to get us closer to our God. Because there's been times in my life when things have failed me. Sponsors have failed me. The program of Al-Anon has failed me. And AA finally failed me. And at 9 years sober, he wasn't shaping up like I thought you should make him shape up. And it's like everything in my life has to fail me in order for me to get closer to my God. And by us praying together, we got closer together. And it was neat. It was a neat experience to start doing that together. One night we were on his side of the bed praying together, and I said, wait a minute, why do we always get on your side of the bed to do this? And he said, because I'm the man of the house. And I said, that's not good enough, you know. So we started doing our prayers down at the end of the bed in neutral territory. Yeah. And we get to keep coming back. And we get to keep learning those things, you know. And a lot of people say, you know, I want a successful marriage like yours. That's not the success. That's a miracle. That's only the product of two people trying to work a program in their own life to make them two individuals, better people. We aren't two sick people leaning on each other. We don't need each other anymore. We're in each other's lives because we want to be today. And as long as that choice is there, it'll be comfortable. And it's like we walk down this road parallel and there's bumps and it goes in and out sometimes. But if we just wait and have the patience to work with our God to get on the other side, and when I feel better, it's okay. And the result of that is that I get to live with an alcoholic that I fall in love with one more time. And it becomes a stronger bond. And it means more. Because you see, there hasn't been any day since I've been in this program that I can't look at Keith and know that he's better than he's ever been. Because I know what the bad used to be. And it hasn't been that bad since you got here. I'm grateful for the things that you've told both of us, and that you shared with us, and that you shared with me. I'm grateful that when I was new, my sponsor told me, you look in that mirror every morning and say, good morning, Sue, I love you. And when I said, I don't want it, she said, one more time, I don't care. You have to do that, and you have to report. The first time I did that, I cried. Because, you see, it was devastating. There wasn't anybody there for me. And I told her that, and she said, it doesn't matter. You just keep doing it. It's only the actions that you take that will get you through the recovery. And so I kept doing it. And there's times that I started laughing. I felt stupid. And today I have fun with that lady in there because, you see, there's somebody looking back at me that loves me. And it makes me feel good in here because, you see, I am number one today. And I know that God doesn't make junk. I love my life today, and it's only because I love you and you love me. I love my way of life today. I love the steps of this program. I love this program more than anything. It's first in my life, and therefore I have become number one in my own recovery. So I don't need another person to validate me anymore. This program works. It works for me, and it'll work for you. And if you need, please stay. Get through those times. Have the courage to just... Time is our greatest asset. It just takes time, one day at a time, to make it to the other side. This too shall pass. And if you're having a good day and you're afraid of it, enjoy it, because that too shall pass. Because we're human beings, and we get to feel all the feelings and all the emotions, and that's good. Because today, more than anything, my life is real. I don't live in fantasy land anymore. Because you're there for me, and I can reach out for you anytime I want to, and you're real, and you share your experience, sense, and hope with me. And it feels so good, because you see, I thought when I got here that I had it all together. And today I know that together we have it all. Thank you very much, and I love you.